All right, this morning we're going to be talking about what should I submit to. It's obvious in Ephesians chapter 5 and talking about the husband and wife roles and responsibilities, and submission is part of that. I want to start with this question. Seemed like a rather simple question. How are you at submission? When I ask that question, where does your mind go? Do you think about submission in general society? Do you think about submission in the husband and wife relationship? What other submissions do you think of? When I say submission, what do you think of? And I'm asking this as a question to you now, so feel free to answer. When I say submission, what comes to your mind? Submission to God. What else comes to mind? Anything?
Submission to the government.
What's that?
Submission to the government.
Submission to the government.
Position of authority.
Position of authority. Okay. What's that? Parents. Okay. All right, so what Shannon said is what comes to mind is how society as a whole, how submission is viewed very negatively. I have to be honest, that's kind of where my mind went to, right? Is when we talk about submission, you know, and think about it in our society, right? A lot of that, I think, is due to our culture. I'm going to do what I want to do. Nobody's going to tell me what to do, right? I'm not submitting to anybody. And you see that over and over and over, and that's kind of our culture in many ways. You know, I think of, you know, a strong arm person, right? I'm going to force you into submission. Maybe an overbearing husband. Maybe it's, you know, one army is going to make this other army submit to them, right? And bullying, all that comes to mind. And so often our first thoughts are the negative. And the reality is, it's easy to submit with what we agree to. Where does the challenge come in? The challenge comes in is when we don't agree with it, right? It's very easy to be submissive to something that you are okay with, but let it not be quite okay, and that's where some challenges come in. But that's not some of the options that we're given when we get into specific things. Now, during this lesson, I want to give you some concrete examples of submission. Not only in marriage, but other aspects of our lives. And, you know, for some, this is so easy, it seems so natural that you don't even think of it in those terms. For others in marriage, it's a daily challenge. And so you have to figure out where you are and you know, as far as how it is for you, but we're all still measured by God's standard. God has said some very specific things, and those things are what we need to be considering. So let me ask this question. I'm going to step back and maybe from a bigger perspective. Who is to be in submission and to whom, according to James chapter 4 and verse 7? Who's to be in submission? It says, submit therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Who is to be in submission? You didn't hear what Joel said. If we're in submission to God, the other submissions will fall into place. That's what James 4 is talking about. Submit, therefore, to God. We are to submit to God. And that theme is true throughout the Bible. And there's some words that I would say are synonymous with submission. When we talk about submission, yield, surrender, give in. When God's children are told to submit, the idea is we give ourselves completely over to Him. We choose to place ourselves under His authority, under His control, and we desire to please Him, to do His will. Now, notice the word therefore. I'm going to steal from Shannon's playbook. I know Shannon likes to, when there's a therefore, okay, therefore what? And where did that come from? What's that in comparison to? The ESV says, James 4 this way, submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Therefore, what? If you look in the context, verses 1 through 6, it's describing the confusion and contention that they have there in the early church in Jerusalem. And James says, well, what's causing all this fight? What's causing all these quarrels among you? And then James addresses their fighting, their covetousness, all of that. And what was happening is they were allowing sin to govern their choices. And so he addresses that. In verse 6, James reminds believers that God opposes the proud, but shows favor and grace to those who are humble. What was happening in their pride? The Christians were resisting the truth of the scriptures, the truth of God. And the remedy was what? Submit themselves to God. Verse 10, humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up. So James is challenging them and basically telling them, you want to resist the devil? You want to overcome that? How do you do that? Submit, therefore, to God. So that's what we have to submit to. That's not whether or not you're married. Doesn't matter. Single, married, whatever. That is just something that we have to do, is being willing to submit to God. Okay? What other relationships require us to be in submission? What are some others that you can think of? Any? Okay. Hebrews 13, 17, in the context talking about elders, obey your leaders and to submit to them, for they keep watch over your souls as they will give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with grief, for this would be unprofitable for you. Maybe an example of that. Going back, hard to believe it's been 3 years, right? This month, 3 years. When COVID hit. And we ask over the course of time as elders that you wear masks inside. And that was based off the best information that we had at the time. That was based off what we felt like was the best thing to do for everybody involved. And I know there are people that did not want to do that, but what did you do? You submitted to our request, and you did it. And you did it without complaint. Thank you. There are places that didn't do that, right? Was that hard? Maybe in some ways, absolutely it was hard for people to do that. In other ways, it was no big deal. But the reality is, that's what you did. And I think that helped us. I know it certainly helped me, but helped us as a congregation, right? There are other congregations that I'm aware of that didn't happen, and they're still living with some of the consequences of that. So that's just, again, trying to give you some concrete examples of what we're talking about when we're talking about submission. Many times we think of a major event, but it's not always a major event. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. What are some other relationships that would require us to be in submission? Okay.
This morning I was doing 70 and everything was a mess and we were stood still. So anyway, we don't need silence. So we need to submit to the local laws. There are local laws that we ignore.
Yes, 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 13 and 14, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to be a king as to the one in authority, or to governors as sent to him for punishment of evildoers, for praise of those who do right. It's another tough one, isn't it, sometimes, to submit to that authority? But that's what we're to do. What happens when we don't submit to that authority? Right? How many of you, when you drove here this morning, decided to drive in the left lane? On a two-lane road, you drove in the left lane. I would say none of you, because you're all here. What would happen if you decided, well, I'm not in submission to that. I'm going to drive in the left lane because that's where I want to drive, right? We don't do that. Why? Well, because of the, we know it's dangerous. We know it's not a good thing to do. It's not wise. All of those things. And we can see that when something that simple, but yet when God tells us to follow him and things don't always make total sense to us as to why to do that, we'll fight it. But yet in some other things we don't. But again, we're challenged. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 18, in another instance, servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also those who are unreasonable. This is a hard one, isn't it? And you'll maybe think about it in from your employer-employee relationship. Some places are easy to work, easy to submit to those in authority, while others, it's not so easy. You know, so that can be a challenge. Like I said, it's easy to submit, or it's easy to submit when you're in agreement, but when you're in disagreement, it makes it much harder. What does God expect of us, right? So why am I talking about all this? To help us realize that submission is not a foreign concept, and submission is, again, all throughout the Bible. We even see it with Jesus. Who is Jesus in subjection to? The Father, right? Do you think about it in those terms? I thought God the Father and God the Son and the Holy Spirit were all equal. Aren't they? I see a few people nodding. Yeah, they are. So how is Jesus in subjection to the God the Father? He chose to put himself there. Let me give you a couple of examples. In John chapter 8, I did nothing of my own initiative. John chapter 12, for I did not speak of my own initiative. Verse 10 of chapter 14, I did not speak of my own initiative, but the Father. Right? In all those cases, Jesus is talking about his submission to the Father. So how do we, not justify is the right word, how do we make that make sense? Does that mean that Jesus was an understudy of the Father? Does it mean he was lower in rank or of lesser value than the Father? What does it mean?
For example, purposes, setting an example, a standard for us.
Setting an example and a standard for us. Jesus chose to do this, to put himself in subjection. Right? Yeah, even unto death. Yeah, Father, not my will, but yours, right? I don't want to do this, but he does, but he doesn't, right? He endures it. When we think of that in those terms, I think what's helpful for us to realize is the roles that God the Father had. What was the role of God the Father? God the Father was the architect of this plan from the very beginning. He laid out the plan, and we can see it throughout the entire Bible. It's amazing when you think about the foreshadowing that God put out there. We talk about it quite often, like with Moses and the children of Israel and the Passover lamb. Who's the Passover lamb? Right? Jesus is the Passover lamb. And all the foreshadowing that we see, and there's lots and lots and lots of those. Maybe one day we'll get to study those. Right? God the Father is the architect. Who executed the plan? Jesus. Jesus is the one that came. Jesus is the one that lived. Jesus is the one that suffered. He's the one that gave himself, right? You have the architect of the plan, and you have the one that executed the plan. They have two different roles. You see where I'm going? They've got roles. They had roles. It doesn't mean one is better, lesser, greater than the other. Yes, sending the Spirit, sending the Helper. John talks about in chapter 17 where Jesus has a prayer for the, as he's getting ready to go to the garden or on his way to the garden, he's having a conversation with his 11 remaining disciples, and he's talking about the Helper that's going to be coming, the Helper, the Spirit, the Holy Spirit's coming to help. The I'm going to send the Spirit, or I'm going to send the Helper. That's what Jesus is talking about. And again, not that one is any greater than the other, but they have different roles to play. We see examples of submission to God throughout the Bible, right? In Genesis chapter 12, the story of Abraham. Abraham was called to submit to God's plan. Basically, he would surrender all the things that are important to him. Remember what happened there? He's in Ur of Chaldees. He's with his family. Everything's going fine. And he says, I want you to go. I'm going to send you someplace, and I'll tell you when you get there. I'm sending you someplace, right? What does he do? He leaves his family. He leaves his possessions. He leaves his homeland, all the things that he knew, to travel to a place that he didn't know in the wilderness, later become the promised land. And throughout his life, there's a lot of examples of him submitting to God. Esther. Esther became queen of Persia, and God put her in King Xerxes' palace at just the right time. She rose to a position of power. What happened to Esther when the pressure came on and they were trying to kill the Jews? The plan was to exterminate the Jews. What did she do? She went and talked to the king, right? And we think, well, she went and talked to her husband. Big deal, right? But it was a big deal, because under that law, if he did not request her to come and she came in to him, what would happen? Well, he would make a decision. Okay, come on in, or kill her, right? And how do we know that? What does she say? In chapter 4, verse 16, she didn't have any guarantee from God that when she went in to him, he was going to take care of her. She said, if I perish, I perish. If I die, I die. If that's what's going to happen, then that's fine, but I'm going to do this for my people, right? Think about Mary's response. Mary, when the angels came to her, and God had given her that message, what did she say in Luke 1:38? Mary said, I am the Lord's servant. May your word to me be fulfilled, right? Excuse me. Those who follow God have a servant's heart. They're willing to do God's will. You think about Peter, you think about James, you think about Paul, Jude, all of them used in their books about being a servant or being a slave of Christ. What is that? Well, that's being in subjection to him, submitting to him, right? And so that brings us to James chapter 5, verses 22 through 32. What relationship is this passage talking about according to verse 32? Not everybody at once. Christ and the church, right? It says very specifically it's Christ and the church. But it's also very clearly talking about the husband and wife relationship, okay? When you see how intertwined these are, I think the whole point of this is not just an ordinary relationship. Just like Christ and the church relationship is not an ordinary relationship, the husband and wife relationship is not an ordinary relationship, right? It's different, right? My friendship with somebody can be a great relationship, can be a very good relationship. It is not like a marriage. Marriage goes all the way back to the time that God established it. It is special, and we need to treat our marriage as being special. And I know it's easy over time to, I hate to say take things for granted. I don't know that that's necessarily it. We just get comfortable, right? That's just the way it is. This is who I am with. And so it's always going to be this way, and we think it's always going to be that way. And so it's very natural to have ups and downs. But, you know, what do you do in the down times? Do you look, how do I improve this? Do I want to fix it? Or can't do anything, I'm just going to let it go, right? We have to work on those relationships. So what relationship do we look for as a pattern? Christ and the church, right? And it's one of those times that you can truly ask, what would Jesus do? And the advantage that we've got is, what did Jesus do? And we'll get into that a little bit more, and that'll make a little bit more sense here in just a minute. So now, what does it mean for a wife to be in subjection to her husband and for the husband to be the head? What does it mean? Who's going to be a brave soul? Brian's back there grinning. All right.
So a verse is voluntary, it's not forced or coerced. She submits because she's glorified man to follow his example. She does it out of love and trust, knowing that her husband will love her as Christ loved the church.
All right. Anybody else? In practical terms, what does it mean for a wife to be in submission to her husband? Let's talk about that part. Allows him to lead and willingly follows. Okay, I'm going to give you an example of that in just a minute.
Shannon? My answer on what we've already talked about just means each one fulfilling their role that God has given them.
Each one fulfilling their role as God has given it. Okay? Why does this question make us bristle a little bit or makes us a little uncomfortable? Or does it? Maybe it doesn't at all.
It's the same reason why verse 21 is awkward, because you would hope that you're submitting to people who love the Lord and are dedicated and faithful, serving Him.
Yes.
Putting other people before them.
That's right.
But that doesn't always work out that way because we're broken people.
That's right. We're broken people, and that can certainly be challenging, right? And you know, we can't escape the influences of our society. We can resist it. We don't have to listen to it, but it's constantly out there, right? But we have to realize this is what God said. This is how God designed it. God designed it from the very beginning for there to be order in the universe, order in families. And what is that order? Husbands, you're to be the head of the home. You are to lead. That's not optional, right? You have a role to play. Your spouse has a role to play. That is to be in submission. That is to follow. So what does that mean? What does that look like, right? Let me give you an example. I know Cindy hates my teaching this class because all I know is the examples to use is us, because that's what I've dealt with. So in 1991, Cindy and I had been married about 3 years. We'd been living down in Kingston Springs. When we lived there, we worshiped at Broadmoor. And if you know where Broadmoor is and where Kingston Springs is, it's a pretty far drive. It wasn't that we minded driving. There was a great congregation there. The elders did a great job leading, had a lot of friends there. But because of where we lived, we couldn't have a lot of people in our home. It was just inconvenient, right? So, you know, if we wanted to have somebody over, we did on occasion, but it was a bit of a challenge. Right? And so we talked about it, and you know where we live, and so our first house was about a mile further down the road from where we live today, and so Hillview made sense in a lot of ways. We came and visited, and you know, it was discussion back and forth, and Cindy would have preferred to stay at Broadmoor. Well, why? Well, she'd been there longer. She had friends there. She didn't really have any friends here. I mean, she knew some people, but hadn't spent a lot of time with them. She would rather have stayed there. I made the decision for our family that we needed to be here, right? Now, what did she do? Okay. She never made me want to regret that decision, right? She didn't say, I told you. Yeah, whoa, what? Because, yes, there were some difficult times back then as well. I mean, there's always challenges at times. She never questioned it. She talked about it. But when the decision was made, she got behind it. And she did everything that she could possibly do to make sure that it was successful, to doing her part, right? That's what we're talking about in submission. Now, fast forward a few years. What did that, her reaction do for me as the head of my home? I was making the best decision I knew to make for our family. What did that do for me? She showed me a level of respect that was never mentioned, never talked about it. But let me tell you, it impressed me. She could have made my life miserable, and she chose not to. She did everything that she could to make sure that we made the decision, made it the right decision, right? And I respected her for that. And so when time came years later, and I've talked about this before, I had some opportunities. My work came to me. My boss said, "Hey, why don't you move with me to Japan?" Wow, what a career opportunity, right? I didn't even talk to Cindy about it. I didn't need to. I knew how she felt. It would hurt her. And so I said, "No, I'll pass. Thanks anyway, appreciate it." A few months later, "Hey, why don't you move to Japan? We could really use you over here." "No, it's okay." I was asked at least 4 times. And I never regretted it. I never thought that much more about it. Because of what she did for me in 1991, gave me the desire, I want to help her. And I knew, moving to Japan in such a totally different culture with 3 little boys would just put her in a tailspin, right? Not that she couldn't handle it, and if I asked her to go, she would do it, no problem. She wouldn't like it. She would have gotten used to it. She would have made it work. There's no doubt in my mind, but I chose not to, right? And I think that's how God intends it to work. That's what he wants us to do. So I'm hopeful that that example will make sense to you as to what we're talking about. This is something that a wife does voluntarily. Jesus did it voluntarily. Jesus submitted to the Father voluntarily, right? That's what a wife does with her husband. I can't force her to submit to me. I can strong arm her, I can make her life miserable if she doesn't, and all of those kind of things, but I don't have her heart when I do that. She does that of her own accord. When a husband sees his wife's efforts to honor his role in showing respect and adapting herself to him, I think he's motivated to please her too. I'm going to ask for her input more. I'm going to value her input even more. And I think there's a principle that we see in Luke chapter 6 in verse 38. It says, "Give and it will be given to you. They will pour into your lap a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. For by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you in return." I know the context of that is not about marriage and not about this relationship, but I think the principle there applies. Is that when one spouse or the other spouse pouring themselves out and really caring about each other, it just multiplies. It just does. And so we're given that opportunity, okay? So what do you think? What about the husband to be the head? What role does the husband have? What does it mean to be the head of the family? What does it mean? Brian?
To make sacrifices.
like that word purposeful. That just sticks in my head. You're making purposeful decisions. You're leading. Are you going to always make the right decision? Absolutely not. But where's your heart? What are you trying to do? Are you sacrificing? That's what leading is. It's not, well, I've decided this and this is what we're going to do, right? That may ultimately be the outcome, but what is the process? What do you do when you lead, when you genuinely lead? And well, there's a question, if we get to it, about differences in leadership and headship. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22, I want to call these out. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church. Verse 25, husbands, love your wives just as what? Christ also loved. And verse 29, but nourishes and cherishes as Christ. All right, what's the point of all that? Men obviously want their wives to honor them. They want their wives to submit to them. But there's a part of the verse that we can't overlook as husbands. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. When you think of it in that context, it changes our whole outlook. When I think of it as what Christ did for the church, that's how I am to be with my wife. What did Christ do for the church? I mean, you think about that for a minute. The sacrifice that he made. What he was willing to go through. The ridicule. He didn't put himself in any position of being elite. It was a position of submission. Submission to the Father. And so all of those passages talk about Christ and what Christ has done for us. I'm going to skip number 6 because we kind of answer that, husband, love your wives. But think about this for a second. Even as Christ, verse 23, Jesus was not an oppressor. He didn't oppress the church. He glorified the church, right? He was not selfish, but unselfish. He blessed her. And he got blessings in return. As the Lord, he nourishes and cherishes. Based off of this, what am I to do as a husband? Let's see. Not oppress. Not be selfish. To be a blessing. To nourish and cherish. Sounds easy. How easy is it? God had given him all the power. He could have done anything he wanted to do. Your Christianity today, could Jesus force you to be obedient? He could. Why does he not? Why does Jesus not force us to follow him and do everything he says to do?
Willingly.
Willingly. That's the key. He doesn't want robots. He doesn't want people that are forced to do this. He wants us to willingly do this. Look at your marriage. If I force Cindy into things, how's that going to work? Might work for the moment, for that one event that I'm trying to get done. How's it going to work long term, do you think? What have you seen in real life? The resentment, the pushback, the hard feelings, it's a mess. Yesterday we had an occasion. I have one of my cousins recently passed away, and another of my cousins has cancer, and he knows he doesn't have a long time to live, and we went down to the family reunion yesterday, and kind of an impromptu to see everybody, and I saw him, talked to him for a little while, and while we were there, they introduced somebody that I had not seen before. You know, sometimes with family reunions, you don't recognize everybody. And there was this lady standing there, and found out it was my cousin's daughter that he had given up for adoption at about the same time his other son was being born. He was unfaithful to... It's a mess, right? I mean, just the worldliness and ungodliness of it all is just mind-boggling when I see that. And so I've met somebody that's related that I never knew even existed until yesterday. She had come back into his life last summer. She found out she was adopted and tracked him down and introduced herself to him. And pretty eye-opening, right? I mean, the world. Got to have a conversation before I left. See how he's doing spiritually. Are you prepared? And he said, I may need to call you. Because he knows he's not ready. There's still time for him. When I look at those examples, when I see it firsthand in our families, it's painful. When we don't do it God's way, it's going to hurt. It doesn't mean that when we do it God's way, it's going to be totally easy, right? Do you have challenges in your life? Bill, have you ever been mad at Miss Mary? Have you ever been mad at Miss Mary?
Not often.
Good answer. Maybe I need to talk to him separately. Right. But it hadn't been perfect. It hadn't been easy all the time.
Most of the time.
Most of the time it is. Why is that? Because you're doing it the way God wants it done. It's when we have our own ideas. We don't want to submit. We don't want to do what God says. We don't want to do it His way. And when we don't submit, that's when the problems occur. Does being in submission mean that you are of lesser value or lower rank? Well, wait a minute. The way I ask that question, it sounds like an either or. It's not an either or. It's, does it mean that you are of lesser value, or could it mean of lower rank? Is that what it means when you're in submission? That's what we generally think of. Yes, Bill. I would say, and it worked. And we're going to talk about, Lord willing, next week about communication. In that example that Bill's talking about, communicate, talk. I'm amazed at this. I hate to say it this way, but I'm going to say it anyway. There's a generation, I was talking to Micah, and I was asking Micah about something, I can't remember if it was a job or something he was working on, and I said, well, did you call him? No. I said, you got a phone in your pocket. Yeah, I don't like talking on the phone. I said, all you got to do is just dial the number. I'll dial it for you. Just use the phone. That's what a phone is for. It's not for texting and all that. I mean, you could use it for that. They don't want to communicate, right? I don't want to talk on the phone. I don't want to talk to people. I want to hide behind a screen and send it. Obviously, that's one of my pet peeves, but I'll leave that alone for now. We'll talk about communication, Lord willing, next week. But to Bill's point, right, you do what you need to do. But back to question number 7. Is it of lesser value or lower rank? No. Not in the kingdom of God. Right? 1 Peter 3:7. You husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way as with someone weaker, since she is a woman. Then what? And show her honor as what? A fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. What do we do when we don't honor our wives? What do we do when we don't hold her up? Your prayers will not be hindered. God doesn't want to listen to you if you don't honor her. Wow, that's pretty powerful. Pretty eye-opening. Does it sound like she's any lesser in any way? Maybe another concrete example, you know, that conversation that Bill has with Mary. Do you think Bill puts her down? Do you think Bill says, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard? Do you think Bill says those kind of things to Miss Mary? I don't think so. When Bill's out in public, does Bill put her down publicly? Never heard it. Are you kind, like we talked about a couple of weeks ago before our meeting? There's this mutual respect, the respect that you have for the position that God has put you in and put your spouse in. She supports you in the place that God has put you as the head of the home, and as the leader, you support her in the position that God has put her in the home as well. Yes. Yep.
But those soldiers are the ones who they accomplish the goal, right? They're a greater value than he is, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, who's making it happen, right? Absolutely. What Chan said is, you know, you have a general and you have the soldiers. Obviously, the general is strategic and is talking about leadership and how we need to do certain things and where they need to be and all that. But when it comes down to execution, who's doing the execution? It's not the general that's doing the task. It's those under his command, right? So, which is greater? Both are important, I think, in God's eyes. God gives the role to each, okay? All right, 2 minutes. When a husband leads, as he should, is this an easy task? It's a bit of a trick question. Because in some ways it's hard to do, and while in others, because it's God ways, it's not. Because we've talked about that, I'm going to move on just a little bit faster to get to another question. It's not always easy. God requires us to show that we believe in him. But it doesn't take long looking around at the world and seeing just how hard it is when we don't do it God's way. So, very important for us. How are headship and leadership related? Just very quickly, you can be the head without leadership. Learn how to lead in your home. That's to lead in love, to honor your wife, to hear your wife. And again, we'll talk a little bit about communication next week. What are some reasons wives don't submit to their husbands? You
culture.
Think? What?
Culture.
Culture? Not a popular thing. What else? Not that it's justified, but why would a husband be hesitant to follow her husband, to submit to him?
They don't respect
him. Right? Is he living respectable? Right? Now, that's not a criteria. God still expects that relationship. Right, he talks about how a woman can win her husband over. If he's an unbeliever, he can win her over, right? Doesn't relieve us of that responsibility. But you can see why and why it makes it very difficult, why it makes it hard. What are some other reasons you can think of?
Abusive.
Yeah, an abusive husband. I'm familiar with a couple of cases, none here. Of some husbands being abusive to their wife in different ways. What else? Yeah, you can't submit to something that's not there. There's got to be leadership happening. Yep. Good point, Garrett. Okay. Well, God never said it's going to be easy. But he does expect us to do these things. And, you know, it's been my experience that when we don't follow the roles that God has given, it's going to be very difficult. and it's going to be very challenging. I know we ran through these things very quickly this morning, but thank you for your time and attention. Look forward next week to talking about communication and what that's going to mean to us.